Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And I am so excited about my guest today. First of all, I think she's the first guest I have ever had in Austria. Oh my gosh, is there a more beautiful place in the world than Austria? Of course, I say that coming from the mountains of Colorado. So I am partial to mountains, but I mean, it is just so gorgeous. And, you know, today we're going to be talking about branding and in particular, international branding and personal branding. And so please join me in welcoming Bridget Boykoski to our program today. Welcome, Bridget.
Hi, Deb. Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be your guest today.
Well, we're going to have so much fun.
Yeah, this time role reversal.
Well, Let me tell people a little bit about you and then we will dive into this. So Bridget Boykoski is a global and personal branding strategist who helps clients craft meaningful strategies that effectively elevate their brands to unleash their full potential. Bridget is the founder and owner of Bridget Brands, a branding strategy boutique that offers workshops, one-on-one trainings, and digital courses to empower personal and organizational brands. Together with her clients, she goes deep and helps to bring the brilliance out of them to let them shine authentically. Bridget is also host and producer of Brands Talk, a podcast for brand lovers who want to learn from thought leaders, CEOs, business owners, and experts who tell their brand stories and share valuable firsthand insights. Bridget is not only a speaker, but has also been teaching for almost 20 years global marketing management and branding topics at universities around the globe. She earned her PhD. Yes, she is a PhD in social and economic sciences at WU Vienna in Austria, specializing in international marketing and management, and her master's in business administration and education. Moreover, she is a certified trainer in communication, conflict management, and leadership. She also received her design thinking workshop certification from that little place called Harvard, which helps her coach her clients to think out of the box. As a head flight attendant early on in her life, she learned what makes customer service special and to be a leader of multicultural teams, which she has been refining since then in academia and the private sector. Bridget is also, because, you know, she doesn't have enough on her resume, an international best-selling author of the book Significant Women, Leaders Reveal What Matter Most. She reveals how she got into her sweet spot, her journey of understanding her pain, which ultimately became her purpose in life. When she's not working, she likes to go for a long run listening to podcasts like this one and loves to knock herself out with Muay Thai boxing. So again, Bridget, welcome.
Yeah, again, thank you, Deb. Thank you for this lovely introduction.
I know, so much fun, so much fun. Well, what I always like to start with is finding out how my guests got to where they are today and how you discover that this truly is your passion in life. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's basically all about serving people. That's mm-hmm. what I feel is my purpose on this earth. And I have loved to do that for as I can think of. So, and I think it all started with my first job as a flight attendant. So, when I realized how rewarding it is to see happy passengers getting off the plane after a long flight, like 13 hours or a short flight.
Right, because you would have done international flights.
Whatever. Yeah, so mostly international flights. So they can be really long and especially during the night. Yeah, and when they get off and they thank you for, you know, for that special service that we offered, and they had this sparkle in their eyes, so that was really rewarding. That's what I felt. And during that time, I really learned how important it is to give your best and create an atmosphere, an experience that exceeds customers' expectations. Mm-hmm. So in my case, it was the passengers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it made me feel I'm doing something right and I can really bring joy to others' life. And mm-hmm. yeah, since then, I truly believe that I'm here to serve and that I literally live what we call servant leadership. Mm-hmm. And I learned that. And at mm-hmm. that time at this airline, my boss, I don't know whether you know him, Niki Lauda, he's a former Formula One car race driver. And he was the owner of that particular airline called Lauda. Yeah, and I worked for him for 5 years. And he expected us to serve and give, was minimum 100%. Mm-hmm. So it's not 80% or 70% and that's enough. Mm-hmm. It was 100% pure. So our slogan was also service is our success. So I really internalized it. I lived it and I still do. And I always will because I ingrained it. Yeah, it's something that really became part of my person, part of my personality. And at that time, we really also went the extra mile and the airline's organizational culture. It was a private airline competing against the state-owned airline. It was very unconventional, startup-like, dynamic. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we always were encouraged to constantly live outside of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we never knew what the next day is going to bring. And showing high flexibility, being able to pivot in real time to any sudden irregularities or situations, that were really key to do that. Yeah, we were motivated by this guy. He just had it, you know, going into one direction. Everybody was striving for the best of our, to getting the best out of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we also were motivated because we could stay at certain destinations for sometimes a few days, sometimes it was a week. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we spent a week in Sydney and 10 days in Bangkok with a flight in between Bangkok, Hong Kong, Bangkok, or went to Cancun and stayed there for a week.
Wow.
Or Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. So we always were, you know, getting to know different cultures, different mentalities. So it really broadened our horizon and to understand and indulge into these different cultures. So, that's what I really liked. And it's why I like to be global because of interacting with all these different kinds of people and being a flight attendant, being a host. And yeah, I love to just hosting people, whether it's dinner or it's a lunch or inviting people to a party. Yeah, and learning that, how to do that. It was also the door opener for my future development of servicing people because there was a point in time I knew that flying around the world will not make me happy in the long run. It's a girl's dream. It's something that you do. It's very stressful. And at that time specifically, you know, we were really every day asked to get out of our comfort zone. And there were no real regulations, you know. It was more of a mess and more of chaos management than, oh, we have to go to Jamaica tomorrow. Let's go. Mm-hmm. How do you get back? We do not know how to get back. It was really always being on a mission and not knowing what's going to come. So it was relatively unregulated, I would say. And I also was missing more the intellectual part of my life. It was always kind of troubleshooting. But after a while, when you have done it for a while, you're getting used to that. And I was like, so there needs to be more in life than being a flight attendant. There needs to be something else that how I can serve. So with that in my mind and knowing that this job also has an end. So at that time it was like when we turned 36, the contract terminated automatically. Because he wanted only young flight attendants.
Right. And they had a a look, shall we say.
So if we have a look and still, you know, it's like you have it on your forehead. It's kind of, you fall into that specific category if you're going to stereotype, which you should not do. So, anyway, I knew I had to do something else. And I left that job and started as a student. I started studying. So that's how I did my first transition into a new life chapter. I became a student. So I studied international marketing and management and business education. And with my idea of going back to the airline industry, because I really lived it, it's
And you were you knew airline.
Yeah, I mean, this is a real unique business. Yeah, it's something different than maybe any other job. It has something very, let's say, inspiring, and I don't know. And at that time when I graduated, the airlines rather fired than hired, because they were maneuvering through really big turbulences of mergers and acquisitions. So I had to pivot, and then I did different other jobs and you know, tried out what I would like, what I would not like, and so I was in different industries. It was a nice time learning other things. And then I went back to the university because I thought, okay, let's get the icing off the cake and do a PhD. So I did my PhD in international marketing and management. I learned how to teach. I did teaching a lot, and then also speaking at different universities, and also had different assignments to teach different parts of the world. So altogether, I taught, you know, in Hong Kong, I course in Vietnam, in Russia, in the Ukraine, in Asia, in London, in Great Britain, then also in Canada and in the US. In the US, I taught for one school year international management. So I really could keep this this life going of being person. And since I taught English, I also taught international students. So students coming from different parts of the world. It was really interesting also to watch them, how they get to know each other, how they learn from each other's culture, like a Japanese person from a US person, from a US person from a person from an African country, or Australia. And, you know, with, let's say, someone from Finland. It was really interesting. I still do it as a sideline. I still have to do teaching assignments as a sideline thing running. And it's nice to be kind of, you know, in contact with universities. And young people and learn from them. Because you also learn a lot from your students. And you are always... current, you stay current with their ideas, and it's a totally different generation that you learn to work with, to get an understanding of. So yeah, and that's how I became a teacher, a professor at the university. And I also continued my career in the private sector. I was setting up the market research department in a real estate company. And the financial crisis came up, and you know what happened in 2008.
Right, the whole world really did kind of go thud.
There I was, and then the university asked me if I want to continue teaching and take on more assignments, and that's what I did then. I received an 8-year contract, which terminated last year. So there I was, knowing that in 2020 my contract is going to end. I started with workshops. Offering workshops to companies in branding, in leadership, in basically the combination of branding and leadership, because leading in an organization, you do that in alignment with the values of the organization mm-hmm. and of how the organization mm-hmm. wants to present itself to the world, right? So that was really interesting, very successful. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of really make that mm-hmm. to my business. And mm-hmm. then in 2020, you know what happened, yeah. Mark?
Everybody came to a halt.
Mm-hmm. I came to a halt, and the business model I was about to follow and build upon mm-hmm. was not working anymore because nobody needed any branding mm-hmm. expert. Mm-hmm. Everybody needed to save money, right? Yeah, so then I had to pivot again, and I started my first podcast, and then I was also asked by a university, by an executive MBA program, to start creating online courses.
Wow.
Yeah, so because, I mean, I have created courses for mm-hmm. the last 20 years. I have mm-hmm. I've learned it, actually. I have studied it, how to do that. Mm-hmm. So that was the next logical step to do, mm-hmm. to go into online course development, mm-hmm. online course creation. Mm-hmm. And I really like it. And it's something you can do from your home office.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Go anywhere. So it's a beautiful thing. And mm-hmm. that was a silver lining. And it was something, yeah, COVID for me was in that sense a blessing.
Right. Because you were able to expand what you were doing.
It showed mm-hmm. me way of how I can serve mm-hmm. and how I can serve in my best possible way. I love mm-hmm. to serve people. I like to teach people. Mm-hmm. I really like to guide them. I really like to show them. I really like to support them. Mm-hmm. And not only in the classroom, but in a physical classroom, mm-hmm. but also on their own pace. Mm-hmm. So it's usually courses they can demand whenever they want, mm-hmm. download and do this and that. And then online session. So mm-hmm. that is actually the perfect thing to do. Mm-hmm. And slowly we are going back, hopefully, to also do workshops in mm-hmm. a physical room. Mm-hmm. And that's what I also want to do, of mm-hmm. course. So there's two different ways. It's mm-hmm. the online course that I also will create for my own company. Mm-hmm. So I create my first online course now, which is going to be
launched. Right, it's due to launch in about November.
Yeah, so it's Own Your Brilliance, Make Your Brain Shine. Mm-hmm. It's for kind of boxed in corporates who feel trapped, who feel invisible, mm-hmm. and always were thinking about doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. People who have maybe already a sideline, mm-hmm. side hustle, that they want to really go for mm-hmm. and are really, inspired about mm-hmm. and passionate about, but lack in self-worth mm-hmm. yeah. mm-hmm. and have no clarity of how to bring that about. Mm-hmm. People that would love to, but play small. Mm-hmm. They think they're not able to. Mm-hmm. They might fail. What if and what if and what if? Mm-hmm. Something is holding them back. Mm-hmm. So this course is exactly for that people.
Wow.
Who are either still in an organization mm-hmm. Who would really like to break out mm-hmm. of their 9-to-5 job mm-hmm. or there are others that got laid off because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And they think they need to go back into an employment mm-hmm. but would love to do their own thing. Mm-hmm. But think they are not worth it. They can't mm-hmm. do it. Yeah, they are not ready. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are others, they have started to work from home and mm-hmm. love it. They don't mm-hmm. want to go back to the office. Mm-hmm. So they want an alternative. So these are the three types of people that I speak to with my mm-hmm. course. Yeah. So I help them to kind of dissolve these limiting beliefs, mm-hmm. to unlearn this old conditioning of playing mm-hmm. small. I went through the same thing. I know exactly right. what you're mm-hmm. talking about. You know, it's something that is so freeing once you have understood mm-hmm. that it's all in your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can change that. And that is for me serving. It's serving to help them transition into that new mindset, to mm-hmm. shift to that new mindset, mm-hmm. to be able to start, to be confident enough, yeah, crystal clear, mm-hmm. also plan in their hands with a roadmap mm-hmm. to go that step to become become their own boss. Right. So that's for them, and that's my course that I'm going to launch in November.
Ooh, I can't wait. That's going to be so cool.
Yeah, so far to that. And yeah.
Right, you're just, you have done so much, and it's incredible. I mean, you've had the opportunities to be able to do things, and you know, I love this, and you know, global branding and global marketing, I think is something that is so interesting, because yeah. Especially I think in the United States, we get very self-centered, maybe, you know, in a lot of ways. And you know, I think one of the things that the pandemic made us do was really think about, okay, I can work with people from around the world. You know, all of these various things, you know, clearly there are, you know, brick and mortar places that, you know, they pretty much have to deal with the people within, you know, a certain area. But for so many people, if they are providing a type of service, there is nothing that limits them. But they don't understand that marketing and branding in one place is very different somewhere else. I, you know, before we moved to Atlanta, I taught a course at Metro State University, and we talked, it was in communications, and we talked about that. We talked about how, you know, things that we do in one country can actually be very offensive in another country. And, you know, just things like color, word choice, all of those various things. You know, I still remember one of the coolest things, and I still do this to this day. I had a Japanese student, and he talked about business cards.
Yes.
And he said, you know, what we do, you know, if you gave me your business card, I would probably glance at it. Yep. Toss it on my desk, you know, stuff it in a pocket, do something like that. And for many Asians, that's very offensive, because they see that business card as an extension of themselves. And mm-hmm. So, you know, what I should do to show respect is take the card, look at it, and then put it in a place of honor. So like put it right in front of me, don't cram it in my pocket, things like that. You know, and just little things like that. And of course, what I have found is when I do that, it makes me remember the person, because I'm looking at it. I'm looking at their title, maybe what they say they do. So it's a way for me to remember them. And so I just thought that was a very cool technique that has many, many uses.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very good example with the business cards, mm-hmm. because, you know, you pay the respect mm-hmm. to the other person in mm-hmm. the other culture.
Right.
And to have an understanding, that's mm-hmm. the way how we communicate and mm-hmm. we deal with each other. It's having it in both hands mm-hmm. and looking at it, not just briefly, but mm-hmm. give it a few seconds, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
mm-hmm. and then put it in a very nice place of honor. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's, and it's with everything. So mm-hmm. every culture has its idiosyncrasies. Mm-hmm. To do business and in order to be respectful mm-hmm. or respectfully doing business, mm-hmm. you need to know them. Mm-hmm. So what it means, you need to do your homework before mm-hmm. you hit. Yeah, you really need to immerse into that culture, read about it. Mm-hmm. The best way is actually going there and
right. Spend- oh, we wish.
You know, really, it's there's so many things on the surface that you know that you can read about, mm-hmm. yeah. But there is so much below. Mm-hmm. Yeah? It's this iceberg model that
right.
you know
mm-hmm.
that is beneath, mm-hmm. under, yeah. That we need to get an understanding of, mm-hmm. and we can only do that when we interact with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is absolutely crucial, mm-hmm. and. Have said you moved from one place in the United States to another mm-hmm. place. But the US is a huge country. Mm-hmm. So until the market is really saturated, mm-hmm. you can grow your business really big, you know, mm-hmm. in your own country.
Mm-hmm.
But in that country, you also have different subcultures.
Right. There are definitely differences. There were some things that really surprised me here. I mean, one of the biggest was, you know, I attend networking events, haven't in 18 months, but, you know, I did when I first moved here. And I did in Colorado. I attended a lot of events. And, you know, it's a networking event in Colorado. You go, you chat, you chat, you chat, you get your food, you sit down, there's a program, right? Here, we do the same thing, except we have a prayer. And the first couple of times, that just really threw me. I was like almost, mid food in mouth type of thing, and all of those things. Because, we are in what's known here in the States as the Bible Belt. But it was just something that is it always happens. At some point during the event, there is a prayer. Maybe it's at the start, maybe it's at the end. But that just totally threw me. And I thought, Colorado people would scoff at this. And here it's just something that you do. And even one-on-one meetings. I mean, I learned very quickly when we got our food to pause, wait and see, were they going to say a quick blessing? And it happened more times than not. So it's that word that you said, and it's respect. It's respecting what they're going to do and what is important to them.
Mm-hmm. What did I want to say? Yeah. And it's also the business etiquette. Yeah.
Yes. East
Coast, West Coast. Mm-hmm. And you have different attires. It's a different way of showing up, you know, you should know that when you go somewhere,
right.
So that is paying respect, because you go to another place, you're basically invited somewhere else doing business. That's what needs to be known, right?
Right. Yeah.
And and across the world, it's even more so. The more you go into for big companies, like big brands, for example, Walmart goes into Canada. So that was not such a big deal, because is pretty similar to the US, but it's not in Europe. For example, in Germany, they totally fail. Mm-hmm. Or another good example would be Kellogg's cornflakes. Everybody knows that. They're very successful in most parts of the world, but completely failed in the Indian market. So because they thought they could roll out the same product, the same standardized product, they have rolled out everywhere around the world, but completely failed in that market. With an imperialistic approach, that's we are doing it there where we do it at home, counts and makes you successful, is absolutely a wrong assumption.
Right. Yeah, one of my favorite things to do here, and I've done it several times. We are the worldwide headquarters here in Atlanta of Coca-Cola. And they have, of course, they've got the Museum of Coke, and they have a huge international area. And they talk about the fact that, in some areas, it's one of them, and I forget which country it is, their biggest product is an orange drink. And part of that is because they don't, because of religious reasons, they don't do caffeine, and so Coke is not going to be sold there. A different product is sold. And clearly they spent a lot of time doing their market research, because they didn't want to fail in those countries.
Yeah, they had green tea Coke in Japan. Mm-hmm. You would not get in Europe, or I think in the US. And then you have Diet Coke and Coca-Cola Light. So we cannot label it Diet Coke in Europe because of any jurisdictional things. Not allowed to, have to call it Coca-Cola Light. And then in India, for example, you have the sugar from a different source, and it's much sweeter because the Indians have a much sweeter tooth. The Coca-Cola in India will also taste differently. They have this global look, but they also localize in that, because the product tastes different. They have also in Thailand a completely different advertising theme. You will not see anywhere else. Coca-Cola is very strong in Thailand, but it's very much localized. It's Coca-Cola with the global look, because you want to have consistency, across all the markets.
Right, the branding.
Coca-Cola, right? But they prune it. They kind of localize certain taglines that really connect with the local market, and very important are also the endorsements. So the endorsers, this celebrity endorsers,
right? Oh yeah, you have to have a local celebrity that's endorsing it, somebody, now they might recognize like a movie star, maybe even a sports figure here from the United States, but they don't want them. They want someone from their community, from their country.
Yeah, it's all about feelings. You want to connect on a visceral level. So they adore this celebrity, this local celebrity. And then Coca-Cola is co-branding with that celebrity that has a lot of power and leverage. So that's why they do that. They team up with the local endorsers, celebrity endorsers. So that's very strong in India. That's also very strong in China. They also do that. So all the different kinds of brands, like Colgate did it when they introduced their Colgate toothpaste there. So they were very successful with that. It cost them a huge amount of money because you set up a relationship with the local. So that is, and also with the taste, as I said, Colgate came up with specific toothpaste tastes, like green tea, green tea and mint and lime. So that is something completely different. It's basically localized to the Chinese market that they like it. And also they invented the stand-up tube for the toothpaste. And that was then really successful in the rest of the world. But Upspring, where it was developed and innovated, was for the Chinese market.
Interesting. So
it was a springboard market then for the rest of the world. Yeah. Right. So there's a lot of things that are invented for specific markets and then basically reversed back to other markets. That's what we call like a reverse innovation. There's, for example, another good example is Levi's jeans in China. Yeah, so they launched the first brand outside the US and called Denizen. So very successful for the Chinese market and it spread to India, to South Korea, to Singapore, and other markets. And in 2011, it was reversed, so-called brought back to the United States and was sold at Target stores for a third of the price of the Levi's jeans. So you kind of have different customer groups that you can appeal to as a company with different brands. So you have Levi's brands more on a premium level and then on a kind of on another lower level, a simultaneous brand that would be Denizen for the budget-conscious customer groups, I would say. Or another good example of understanding local markets is Henkel's Abaya black garment detergent. So Henkel is a German brand, one of the fiercest competitors, basically, of Procter & Gamble with Tide detergent. So Henkel's detergent, Abaya Black, was introduced in the Middle East for as a detergent for black garments to keep them black as black. And they did lots of market research and used a local communication strategy. So they're really localizing with strategy and invented a product specifically for the black products. And it became so successful and they thought, okay, in the Western world or in the European market, also were a lot of black. So let's use that.
Every woman has her little black dress.
And they introduced that back home in the European market and it became a huge success. They just called it differently, you know. Persil Black instead of Abaya for Abaya Black.
Oh, okay. So it's Persil. Okay. Because that is marketed here.
Yeah. And so that's how when you see an opportunity in another market, you come up with innovations that specific market and then you bring it to other country markets or you reverse it back home also to your own market.
Right.
Another good example would be Colgate. tapping the base of the pyramid in less developed markets, for example, in India. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, Colgate was a synonym for toothpaste in the Indian market. So
consumers
literally asked for Colgate.
Right. It's like here, you know, you ask for a Kleenex. But that's the brand, but that means anything that is a tissue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And this is a really good brand for a synonym for a category, right? Mm-hmm. So we made inroads in the rural villages where people have been using charcoal powder and aloe vera extract.
Blah.
To brush their teeth. Mm-hmm. So in these rural areas, you know, people usually apply powder with the middle finger. That's how they brush their teeth. Mm-hmm.
Right. They don't have toothbrushes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Colgate introduced a tooth powder. Yeah? Mm. So that's how they really tried to serve a local market. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So there's lots of stories about how companies enter markets, how companies fail. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also, let's say, Oreo cookie was basically not doing very well at the beginning in the Chinese market. In 2005, they realized that the numbers are really not flying high. Mm-hmm. And it was then owned by Kraft Foods. Mm-hmm. Now, Oreo cookies or Oreo is part of the Mondelez group. Mm. So Mondelez bought it. Mondelez brands such as Ritz, Trident, Cadbury, Belvita.
Kind of the upscale type of snack products.
Basically, we call it a house of different brands. Like Nestle is a house with Captain and others of different brands. Procter & Gamble is a house of different brands and different categories. Mm-hmm. L'Oreal is also a house of different brands, but more in the body care and cosmetics.
Right. And a lot of times you don't even realize that unless you read, you know, manufactured by or something like that. And you're like, whoa, this is a P&G product?
Yeah, like Converse is owned by Nike, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that, but they bought it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they really did well. Did not do well in the Chinese market. Oreo cookies and research revealed that it. Again, they didn't do their homework. They didn't understand their customer.
They just thought they should love Oreo cookies.
They should love exactly these Oreo cookies, which was not the case because it was way too expensive. The Chinese, for the Chinese, the biscuit was too sweet. They don't like that.
Oh, so they really didn't like the frosting.
They didn't know not any of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what they did, then they reformulated the Oreo, the original Oreo, for the first time in 93 years history. Adapted the biscuits. I mean, it's almost 100 years old, right? First time they adapted to local tastes. And what they do, they don't have just one flavor inside, they have two, like orange and mango duo, or
interesting
pork pastry, green tea cake, or red bean, all these kind of different things. We would not really have the
right top. And we're gonna go ew at, right?
Yeah, so the size of the package was also reduced, because they like smaller packaging sizes, and especially at the first taste, at the lower price. And so far, marketing promotions really relied on bonus packs, They were also replaced by more economical in-store samples. And also, they expanded the distribution beyond just grocery stores and hypermarkets to include also the mom and pop stores, the convenience stores. And they also invented then another product line, the Oreo sticks. They are the longer sticks like this. Became a big hit in the market and gained market share very, very quickly. And then they also branched out or used also China then as a springboard for introducing it in other country happens. Right. And what Oreo's cookie learned that that customers have different tastes, mm-hmm. and that you have to be local to or sensible to local mm-hmm. idiosyncrasies,
right.
To get your customers on board. That, mm-hmm. That's really an important thing mm-hmm. to do. So a global brand having a global look, mm-hmm. but at the same time a local touch.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the consistency of one look, one voice needs to be strong mm-hmm. because, you know, there's this global myth. You would mm-hmm. call it the global myth. It's based on quality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because a global brand communicates quality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Brand usually also has this sustainability character that also mm-hmm. goes along with that.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it's easy to be, you know, to have those differences, especially with websites. You know, when you get to looking at it, you realize, oh, okay, well, this website ends in .ca, so it's Canada, .au, it's Australia. And so it's fun, every once in a while you get to the wrong one. You know, so one that you know you hadn't intended, and it's like, well, this is an Oreo cookie, but it looks different. And so it's it is very easy, but you're right, they have that overall brand that signifies quality, you know, whatever it is that their overall brand is, but then they tweak it for their market.
Yeah, twist, slick, and dunk, and then tweak it. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. As you say. Yeah. So Oreo is a brand to have fun with, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese are per se more like they like to have fun colors, mm-hmm. and it's a very colorful mm-hmm. website, blinky website. So mm-hmm. there's a lot going on usually, mm-hmm. very many images, yeah. And they also did a good job now during the COVID crisis. Mm-hmm. They came up with a new campaign. It's called Stay Home, Stay Playful concept.
Ah.
Yeah, it was actually born in the Middle East, mm-hmm. In Africa. So it was rolled out there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a great, simple tagline. Mm-hmm. And it was built on the tagline mm-hmm. that Stay Playful campaign that mm-hmm. was rolled out in the 2019. Right.
And so they added to it to make it timely.
Exactly. So that's how they play. And they mm-hmm. also have the global teams mm-hmm. and have local brand teams. So they're very, mm-hmm. so when you entering other markets, you need to know who you are. Mm-hmm. You need to know, okay, that's our global mm-hmm. brand. But then you need to localize it. So you mm-hmm. need to come from two sides. Mm-hmm. Localize it. You need to understand the customer mm-hmm. inside out. Mm-hmm. You need to understand what the customer thinks.
Right.
You need to understand mm-hmm. what the customer feels. And with who you are as a brand, mm-hmm. your identity, that's what you still can mm-hmm. control. But the image in the market, that's what you create through customers' thinking, mm-hmm. through customers' wants, through customers' mm-hmm. feelings, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's how you bring it together. Mm-hmm. You have the global teams and the local brand teams mm-hmm. that need to work together in sync.
Right, yeah. Right.
That's
true. You know, I think one of the ones that amazed me one time, you know, here we are again in Atlanta. And so I went to the Gone with the Wind Museum, you know, the movie, the book, all of those things. And they had movie posters from various countries. And here in the United States, Rhett has Scarlett kind of draped over his arm, and she's got a fairly low cut bodice. And then it showed, and I don't remember what the country was, but her top came up to her chin. I mean, there was, and of course, you know, the movie came out in the late 50s. You know, there was no bosom that was going to be shown, you know, and just how they had to do the different movie posters for the same movie. And, you know, even you know, a friend of mine was just posting, he's written business books, and just how they have to do the different covers for the different countries. And he said part of it is color. You know, you have to pick, you know, business colors are different. And the imaging, he said, you know, it had to be a very different image and look for the book. And he was, you know, it was a marketing book. So he was just fascinated by all of this. But yeah, it's those seemingly simple things, but things that make it where the consumer knows that you cared enough about them. You know, and so you thought, okay, this book cover needs to look different. This movie poster needs to look different. You know, the inside of the cookie needs to have different frosting, you know, whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially in the Arabic country, mm-hmm. you have to be very careful. In some countries, you cannot even depict women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have to go another theme. You know, mm-hmm. Lux soap doesn't show women. It just shows the soap, for example. Mm. Or IKEA really removed mm-hmm. the women in their catalogs mm-hmm. and a huge outburst. Mm-hmm. And then, so you have to be really also, let's say the perfumery, the fragrance industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you usually advertise with women and with
right. very, and it's usually kind of sexy.
Mm-hmm. Really change the image and mm-hmm. Be careful with that as well. Mm-hmm. And colors also. You have mentioned colors. Mm-hmm. It's colors and numbers. For example, mm-hmm. number 4 in China is a no go. Mm. It's a with death. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you sell something in an arrangement of 4 or in a set of 4, that wouldn't sell. Yeah. Hmm. Or if you price it in the number 4, it wouldn't sell.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you want to price it with a number 8, yeah, hmm. because it brings luck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you have, for example, where you have a large Chinese or Asian diaspora, mm-hmm. like in Vancouver or mm-hmm. on the West Coast, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. also see, let's say, hospitals where you're not having a floor number 4. Mm-hmm. So,
right, like we don't have a 13 in US elevators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, once I had a passenger that showed me the boarding card mm-hmm. and it said row number 13, and I knew we do not have a
right.
row number.
Mm-hmm.
This person was freaking out mm-hmm. because believing in that.
The plane, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have to be really careful with this superstitious mm-hmm. Way of thinking mm-hmm. and also pay respect to the right. different belief mm-hmm. patterns.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I did that with the podcast for episode 666. I mean, 666 in many cultures is not good symbolism. And it's funny, I have another friend who is a big podcaster, and he chose to specifically play on that number and to talk about it. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to skip it. I'm just not, you know, and I did. I totally skipped that number because I knew that for some people, it would have a connotation where it wouldn't matter in the slightest what the program was about. They just wouldn't listen to it.
Yeah. And then we have also the color, and there's also mm-hmm. a funny example. Be careful when you enter other markets. Mm-hmm. You have a color, let's say green. Mm-hmm. You would not use green so much for the Chinese market,
right?
Because green hats are associated with infidelity and used as an idiom for a husband mm-hmm. cheating on his wife. Mm-hmm. So there's always a story behind colors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to be aware of that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what colors are used? Yeah, for this right. mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where if you're doing a website for that country, yeah, you make sure that, you know, it's not. And yet green was one I remember learning about when I was, you know, the teaching my students, you know, for us, it's green money. I mean, you know, and it's also environmental. I mean, you know, there's absolutely. There's that whole thing. And but yeah, in some countries, green is not a color that you use.
And when you know that you might be scaling sooner or later globally, mm-hmm. have that in mind when you start mm-hmm. with your brand, when you right. start branding your products mm-hmm. and services, mm-hmm. what these colors could mean in another country market.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or the numbers or whatever you use. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, Starbucks in the Middle Eastern mm-hmm. country, they had to get rid of the mermaid.
Ah.
No mermaid.
The mermaid didn't go.
She went. She's not on it. So, mm-hmm. yeah, then you have to pivot a little bit mm-hmm. and find an alternative logo for your brand mm-hmm. in that specific market.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you touched on something that I want to discuss a little bit more, and that's women and how in different cultures women are thought of and treated very differently. You know, and from a perspective of women business leaders, how does that work when, you know, when we're trying to do business, say in countries where there is a very differing view of women?
It really depends on the company and mm-hmm. on the country market.
Okay.
So I think nowadays we still in our own markets, we have the problem that women are very often ignored mm-hmm. and that we are having a hard time mm-hmm. really stating or claiming our voice mm-hmm. that we are here and mm-hmm. we want to be heard. So there are still a lot of inequalities mm-hmm. when it comes to gender. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Chinese market has become more open to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because there's a lot of women entrepreneurs as mm-hmm. well. And so here you see much more Western influences. Mm-hmm. Still in the Japanese market, it's still room mm-hmm. to grow a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because women in the C-level positions mm-hmm. are not really existing mm-hmm. yet. So it's more on the lower end because women get the kids and then they stay at home mm-hmm. And are more in a role of an assistant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it comes to the Middle Eastern, this is still a tough place for women.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Especially when we see more a reverse way of development mm-hmm. yeah, in our markets. So here I would be, as a company, to send women mm-hmm. I don't know. I would think twice about it.
Yeah. And that's frustrating because we're thinking, well, she's the CEO. She's the head of marketing, whatever. But you have to, you know, and yes, it's offensive to us to think, you know, that's they're not going to pay attention to her. They might not even let her in the meeting, but we still have to follow what their culture is and slowly make inroads. We can't force our way into it.
And it's very often that in Middle Eastern countries, you still have an intermediary. You're not
right.
directly mm-hmm. talking to that person in charge and they check you out and mm-hmm. have talks with them. Mm-hmm. And that might also be an opportunity to talk about that issue mm-hmm. And see how, what are the, the way mm-hmm. of communicating.
Right.
What is, how is business done? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I remember I was working with a young woman one time and she was from Pakistan, I believe. And, you know, and I could be incorrect on this, but it's been a while since I worked with her. So, you know, maybe things have changed. But if she went to a business meeting, so like a networking event, she could not walk up to another man there and say, "Hi, I'm so and so." Another man, in particular, they preferred it to be a male relative, had to go and introduce her and say, you know, "I would like you to meet." And so for that, she loved LinkedIn because you didn't have to have any of that. You know, she was able to reach out to anybody she wanted to on LinkedIn and not have to have that intermediary in there. You know, and of course, you know, being brought up here in the United States, you know, we all go at that. But yeah. It is the way it is for them. And we do, you know, it's just like taking that business card with two hands. We do still need to show respect to them.
It's the customs. Mm-hmm. It's something that's so deeply ingrained in culture. Mm-hmm. It takes longer that mm-hmm. these things are relaxed.
Right.
And we have, there needs to be more there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think it's beautiful that these women also have an alternative going mm-hmm. through social media,
right?
Mm-hmm. Make relationship mm-hmm. and connect with people around the world mm-hmm. that understand. Mm-hmm. I also have seen that on Clubhouse that people then participate mm-hmm. in that and could kind of own their voice mm-hmm. finally, you know, and other people are listening and mm-hmm. thankful and grateful that. I remember she was participating and in the whole conversation mm-hmm. and we supported her. And that was mm-hmm. for us a very good feeling because we understood how mm-hmm. happy that person is mm-hmm. to own her voice. And
right.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you know, and that ties in with your class, you know, so it's, you know, you talk about owning your brilliance. It is about owning your voice, about owning yourself. And it doesn't matter if you're male, female, you know, whatever culture, whatever sexuality. I mean, all of those things, you know, we need to be comfortable with ourselves. And that is tricky. We've only got a couple minutes left. We didn't talk about personal branding at all. And so I just need to have you on again to talk about that. But it is something that we need to do. And more importantly, we need to help others to do it. And I love that you have the servant leader mentality to be what you can to help people be successful.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's you also feel good when you are of help, when mm-hmm. you see that you can guide people, you right. can support people, it makes you happy. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you get up in the morning and you feel, let's say, not so happy mm-hmm. and the whole happy and you know, it's you just stood up with the wrong leg mm-hmm. and in order to turn that around mm-hmm. is think about how you can help someone mm-hmm. else be happy.
Right. Right.
So that cheers you up instantly mm-hmm. and you are on a completely different mm-hmm. energy level.
Right.
And this is a great why you should be positive.
Mm-hmm.
You should
right. be. Yeah. I saw something on Facebook just yesterday that said the best way to raise yourself up is to raise others up.
Raise others. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's perfect. We shouldn't be stepping on people to get ahead. We should be raising them up because then we all raise up.
Yeah. 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 And we should spread the word about this because if more people do so, mm-hmm. In general, we would be a much happier and joyful mm-hmm. society if we would focus more on the positive.
Right.
And if we focus more on mm-hmm. what can I do mm-hmm. in order to make things better instead of waiting for what other people can do mm-hmm. for us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a wrong approach, mm-hmm. but yeah, so it all starts with us. It all mm-hmm. starts with how we think and whether we take action. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are sitting and waiting mm-hmm. and feeling or being their own victim mm-hmm. and say, okay, life is so sad and everything, mm-hmm. but get up and do mm-hmm. something against it or for it that you're mm-hmm. feeling.
Right.
Action. So with every little mm-hmm. step, a little bit of your path unfolds, you know, and shows you the way. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, you also become much more stronger and mm-hmm. much more confident in and much more joyful. Mm-hmm. And you see that, positive things are mm-hmm. going on positive things. Mm-hmm. So how it works. That's an unwritten
right. Yeah. Negative draws in negativity, positive draws in positivity.
Yeah.
Well, oh my gosh, Bridget, we only have a couple minutes left. This has been so much fun. And we definitely have to continue this conversation. But you know, tell people how they find you and connect with you because you know, I'm sure part of this is people just went, oh my God, I don't know how to do this. This is so complicated. How do they find you and work with you?
Okay, so I am very much busy on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is my preferred platform.
Okay.
You know, there's people busy on all the different kinds mm-hmm. of platforms. I focus more on LinkedIn. I'm mm-hmm. on other platforms as well. So mm-hmm. if you drop me a DM, I'm fine too. Mm-hmm. But LinkedIn, you can find me under my name, Boykowski B. Mm-hmm. Because some call me Brigitte, others call me Bridget. Mm-hmm. So everyone actually worldwide calls me Bridget. There are some mm-hmm. people in Austria call me Brigitte because that's the German version. Mm-hmm. So on LinkedIn, if you connect with me, I would be more than happy. Mm-hmm. And then I also have my own website. Mm-hmm. It's bridgetbrands.com. Mm-hmm. I'm also on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram, on Pinterest, and mm-hmm. on Twitter.
You're everywhere. You're everywhere. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, but I'm more focused on LinkedIn. That's mm-hmm. my home, basically.
I know. That's where we typically communicate. Yeah. Well, you know, this has been absolutely fascinating. And, you know, like I said, I can't wait to do it again. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave everyone with?
Yeah. So if you connect on LinkedIn with me, then you will also stay informed mm-hmm. about my course that I'm going to launch in November. So if you're interested in that, you can also sign up to my newsletter. So you will stay recent with my latest podcast and you will also get the latest information about the course. So in, I think, a few days, you can also sign up to the waiting list and then see what the course really offers, what's cool. in there, what's waiting mm-hmm. for you, what I have developed for you. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you in my course, maybe.
I love it. I love it. And again, the course is called Own Your Brilliance, Make Your Brand Shine.
Exactly. It's going to be on Bridget Brands Digital. So that's what I'm developing right now.
Perfect. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Well, yeah, this has been wonderful, delightful. You know, we will definitely do it again because I think we have so many other things that, that we can talk about. This is why I set the timer, right?
And personal branding to say and about authenticity and all.
I know there's so much more that we can talk about. And
right now, yeah.
Yep. I love it. I love it. Well, I am Deb Creer. I've been having a fascinating discussion with Bridget Wikofsky. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.